This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Good morning to Free Left Turn here on 89.0 Independent Community Media. Yes, and we are our left-wing perspective show. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning.
Good morning, Fred. Craig.
Yeah.
How's it going? Beautiful weather.
Yeah.
Crikey, nice run of weather.
Yeah, it was a good day yesterday. I went to the May Day, what do you call them, May Day celebrations or May Day...
Yeah. Yeah, acknowledgement, commemorations,
workers,
whatever.
Trade
union.
I was a little disappointed in the turnout.
But you said there was 100, you might have been 100
most
people.
Most of those were.
Which is pretty good for Hamilton.
Yeah.
I've seen worse.
Yeah.
It was held in the Civic Square, you know.
They
had a good day for it.
Did they have some speakers?
Yeah, they had a couple of speakers.
Yeah.
But I don't know, no idea who they are.
They spoke well?
Not really.
Not really, okay.
So it definitely wasn't Georgie Danzy, was it?
No.
Okay. But it's, you know, historically it was May Day, you know. It was before, you know, I read a couple of things and they're from the West and it was like about big bad Russia, of course, you know, and all that. But it was actually about workers' rights before that. But on a more amusing thing, you've heard of maypole dancing?
That's what I maypole dancing. Then people get.
There was sort of a connection in a way because maypole dancing and Morris dancing that we used to intimidate the Māori with when they did the
haka. With hankies and bells.
Take
them seriously, yeah.
Yeah, but and I didn't realise that maypole dancing and Morris dancing is all a lot of it is also to do with the start of spring in the other
agricultural,
so
the new crops and things like that.
Yeah.
We used to get young ladies, you know, waltzing around the pole and with large ribbons and wrap the pole up with ribbons.
So there was a connection between
the background,
the maypole dancers and the Morris dancers.
Yeah, but I can't understand the stick that they have.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I don't know what the meaning of that is.
Oh, well, I have no idea.
Probably a truncheon. Policeman. Hello.
Yeah, this looks a bit too flimsy to be a truncheon.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell it is. I always remember a Billy T. James skit from years ago, and he's on the beach and they come across and they're doing their haka and a bunch of these sailors get out and do Morris dancing and he's giggling. They're all, you know, Billy T. James used to, giggle,
you send the Morris dancing in first to soften the enemy up, like making them giggle over and kill themselves
with laughter.
So what else have we got?
Well, I've got something, a little bit of vindication. You know, we won't go into deep talk on it, but, you know, with the last couple of weeks we've talked about the FTA with India, which has been signed on Monday. It's still got to go through parliamentary process and submissions, et cetera, but it has been signed. But anyway, it's quite interesting because this week out came a report from not three boys on a left-wing show, but from Georgia Lala, Paul Spoonley and Sir Peter Gluckman, called People, Place and Prosperity. And it's the case for population strategy. And basically, what we talked about, this goes into a far more researched document, you know, and you can see it online. It's You can see it. It's called COI 2, Centre for Informed Futures. And it's, say, people, place and prosperity. But they've gone in, and basically it discusses what we've talked about is how does our, what happens to our population as it changes, as it grows in population, our ethnicities.
Yeah, I've got the article here in the Herald. The Herald says New Zealand's population bombshell. That's the opening. And it asks a question like fewer births as population ages. Annual population growth dropped from 1.7% in 2023-24 to 0.7% in 2024-25. It asks questions like more Asian, less European. Between 2025 and 2043, the proportion of those who are New Zealand European is forecast to drop from 65% of the population to 55%. And 45% in Auckland. It also raises questions about more competition for global talent. As foreign arrivals spike in recent years, New Zealand has seen the rise in the number of New Zealand citizens moving overseas.
Yeah.
So it raises some really good questions. Oh, like rural areas emptying. You know, because people are going to where to work is. It's a two-page article.
But you can read the report. The report's available to the public.
I was quite chuffed that you pointed out that
we pipped them to the post on breaching the subject. And so it is important. And I say that in the report,
it should be up for discussion.
So in the report, it basically goes the topics are slowing population growth, declining fertility, growing reliance on immigration, an aging population, growing ethnic and cultural diversity, which is what we talk about. You know, what happens to our culture? They argue the case for a population strategy. What do they mean by a population strategy? What is the value of a population strategy? The way forward, the enabling environment of a population strategy, leadership of a population strategy, elements of a population strategy, and the concluding remarks. And basically, it's saying, trying to have the discussion without racism, because if we don't have a discussion. What happens is it can be politicised. And it becomes partisan, and then rather than having a grown-up discussion about it, people grab the wrong end of the stick and off it goes.
This article ends with what to do about it, and the changes that happen, and it said, what would a cohesive long-term plan look like? Elements of a population strategy including social resilience, human capital and workforce, including making the most of overseas skills, infrastructure, which we talked about, social services, aligning metro, provincial and rural needs with immigration settings. Yeah, so Gluckman has identified key challenges, including the short-termism that comes from a three-year election cycle, well-known government silos and the impact of social media algorithms, but these are not insurmountable. We have assets, we have energy, we are energy rich. We're still cohesive as a society, and diversity in general has been a strength. At the end of the day, the most common denominator is the people living in New Zealand. If we don't understand that and what it would look like, other policies will never to be flawed. That's basically
what we talked about.
We're not looking ahead, if we're not planning, we're not anticipating.
And that's social cohesion.
How does
it work? You know, and Māori,
so very, very good article. Recommend it yesterday's Herald and online, what you've just pointed out.
Because we harped on about our current infrastructure not being able to cope with even a population of over 5 million.
Well, it discusses infrastructure and how much actual infrastructure we will need.
Because
the population by Statistics New Zealand is still scheduled to go up another million, 6.5 to 6.5 million by 2048. That's a million more people, which is 20%.
Yeah.
Okay. Is the infrastructure's got to keep up with that? You know.
Yeah. Because currently we don't have. We're not feeding our population properly, and we're not housing our population properly.
No.
Yeah.
Currently. So and he's basically saying let's get bipartisan. Let's have a proper discussion. How do we cope rather than just how do I get elected in 3 years' time and off it goes?
Yeah, that's a real issue to me.
Yeah. Which is dangerous because then you do get all forms of prejudice and...
Or nothing changes.
Or it's just piece by meal. Oh, we need this, so we do it knee-jerk.
Yeah.
And then later on go, we should have done it over there, but they never thought of that.
Yeah.
We need to be like the Chinese.
Visionary word.
Be like China does. Oh, not to say that out loud, but because that's still our enemy, according to Mr. Luxon.
The V word and the M word.
Yeah.
Merit and vision.
Yeah.
Well, that segues nice with another article I came across on Wednesday. Migrants ripe for exploitation. This just came 2 days after the India agreement was signed.
No, that's a problem.
And unions are warning immigration provisions in the India New Zealand Free Trade Agreement could lead to exploitation of migrant workers.
Usually,
information provided to Indian media by the Indian government said that the agreement included a quota of 5,000 visas for skilled Indians to stay in New Zealand for up to 3 years in sectors of interest, which include iconic occupations of Indians, such as yoga instructors, Indian chefs, music teachers, as well as other sectors include information technology, engineering, healthcare, education and construction. So the so this is put through the E2 union. Rachel McIntosh, who said past experience raised concerns. We do have concerns about the potential for exploitation. And this has been a problem in the past.
Definitely. Yeah.
Of course. Any migrants come away.
The Association of Salaried Medical Specialists was cautiously welcoming the deal. Its executive director, Sarah Dalton, said New Zealand already relied heavily on overseas trained doctors. And it's not just doctors, it's nurses and
all the other staff.
All the other staff.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not training enough doctors, and ones are being trained to leave and go to Australia.
We train them, then they go away.
So, exactly. We're paying for, So,
And it's
a huge, there's lots of things going on, and it's lots of moving parts.
So the exploitation that usually gets highlighted is by, and it's, this is not being racist or anything, is by what we call well-off Indian business people exporting their own.
Well, it can be any.
But they tend to be the ones that tend to be highlighted in the reports. That's we're not going down that racist road. It's just what's been reported allegedly.
But I say, vulnerable, you know, there were reports about others coming from the Philippines, you know, the old dairy farming industry, etc.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just about India. Because they're a large migrant group, they get in the news a lot, but it's also, there's cases about people coming in from and working in fingernail things and all that, you know, and, you know, it's how do you get the taxation system to work if people are being paid under the table or not paid and their passports were fouled. It's just a myriad of a mess. And if we don't have strong enough systems in place, it can happen and flourish. In the islands, there were reports about people being overseers of their own race and coming here picking fruit, etc., and the boss guy keeping the money or keeping most of the money and all. There's been awful stories.
And the accommodations substandard.
You go to work it's a bit like a navvy. They give you accommodations and food and then say, well, actually, there's $20 left at the end of the day sort of thing. You know? You don't think that would happen. But it happens not just in New Zealand. It happens worldwide.
That slavery argument.
And that kind of segues, if you don't mind.
Yes.
It's related, isn't it? Leave overhaul can't protect all. This is in reference to Workplace Relations Minister Brooke Van Velden. Now she was going to try and... She was going to try and overhaul the Unworkable Holidays Act, and she's admitted defeat. She said that she was trying to overhaul the Unworkable Holidays Act while making no worker worse off, but this has proved impossible. Van Velden was speaking to the Education and Workforce Select Committee following a submission from the Public Service Association that suggested many workers with complex working arrangements involving substantial overtime and the like would receive less leave. The Employment Leave Bill repeals and replaces the Holidays Act and brings in a new system where leave is accrued based on standard hours worked rather than as an annual entitlement. Workers who work additional overtime or casual hours will be paid an extra 12.5% up front rather than contributing to overhaul leave entitlements. But people aren't happy, or unions aren't happy. Like meteorologist Daniel Scott said, no one should be paid less because they need to take sick leave, family violence or bereavement leave. We're also worried that this would make people less likely to take sick leave like other people have mentioned, that affects both them on an individual well-being level and also compromises the quality of operations and other people. Yeah, so complicated. She
been defeated.
She bit off more than she could chew.
And she's going now, so she's probably got a sights on whatever she's going to do next.
Oh, she's pretty good. Chairship.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
Government company.
She's got the right accreditation. She's been a good Tory, etc. You know.
So not only is there a threat of exploitation of workers through the free trade agreement, it's also the threat of exploitation through domestic policies by changing. Scuppering the Holidays Act and replacing it with something else.
Yeah, all workers' rights, to be frank.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All workers.
Yeah, pay equity stuff.
Yeah, all that.
That was done under her. Mm. Yeah.
So a bulldog's breakfast.
Yeah, well, they stick their nose and they just... It's all for...
They're tinkering around with stuff, eh?
Yeah, they always want to tinker around with something that applies to the worker, but not to the employer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Man.
It's all in favour of the capitalist class. That's what all it is. Yeah.
And it just increases the likelihood of exploitation, I think.
Yeah, that goes down that dirty little road.
Yeah. So that's me, I'm afraid. That was a bit short.
That's what Gluckman's pointed at. That's why they want to have this population strategy. Is all the things that are associated with more population is how do we cope? What processes are in place? What do we need to shore up? You know, what's you know, because say we're a high trust society, it doesn't mean.
Well, I'm surprised actually, because the way things are going, carrying on, you'd think the trust would be undermined even more.
Well, we don't. The average, but I think we're losing faith in our trust, and New Zealand is not as known as trustworthy or as honest as we were. You know, I think we've slipped down the. Down the ladder on that a bit, down the rankings, through corruption and all that. So, yeah, but I say we're obviously going to change in our population because we aren't replacing. You know, the population is going to be sustained by migration. That's the bottom line.
That's probably all the way it is.
We need them to keep the system ticking over. The hospitals couldn't run without.
Well, an ageing population. Who's going to look after? You know,
hospitals, nursing homes, you name it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you know,
we need immigrants to keep the system ticking over.
Yeah,
provided they're paying their taxes.
Well, and when we put it another way, is providing the system strong enough so everyone has to pay their taxes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's no option anywhere. But it's not just that's not limited. That's should it be paying your tax should apply whether you're the farmers and you know there's plenty of other groups that manage you can control what tax you pay at certain levels.
Loopholes, they call it.
Well,
and it's all perfectly legal.
It's legit.
Yeah,
it's perfectly
just morally.
Reprehensible. Yeah. So that's what I think in the report they're saying, well, we need things in place to deal with it all as we grow.
Yeah. Well, good on them for producing the research.
And because it's a real detailed report. So,
And the people, place, and prosperity report.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So Google that and off you go. Mm.
Yeah. What else was there in the news?
Well, there's a spat about Winston Peters and Christopher Luxon.
Were these emails leaked or not?
Well, he sort of apologised a bit, Winston, but, you know, it's a good point. And I think there's a guy, Patman, who's a professor down at Dunedin or somewhere, whatever, and he pointed out that basically it should be a moral decision for New Zealand, not whether it's we need to back America or...
In the current climate, a moral decision. I think we might be waiting a long time.
So the story basically is that got leaked that Winston Peters off the foreign ministry didn't want to come out directly and support the Americans, where the implication was the prime minister wanted to come out a bit stronger in favour of what America... was doing, which is an illegal, in my opinion, and
illegal
to most of the world's thing. Israel and America attacked a country at peace, you know. Yeah. So, and it seems to be that New Zealand's feeling the Prime Minister's office, etc., wanted to be a bit more supportive of of that war.
Yeah, because didn't Luxon say initially that he was really really opposed to the retaliatory action of Iran.
Yeah, he had a go at Iran.
Yeah, yeah.
For defending himself.
But okay, it was around the, you know, Anzac time, and they all get a bit warmongery.
Yeah,
and,
even so,
and
that,
badges and things.
They shouldn't have entered the equation.
I think
the
I think that, I think his comments about the retaliatory action was pre Anzac Day.
Yeah,
stuff.
But it's in that time. It was in that time zone
around that area. Right.
Yeah. No, I think it was very early on when it started.
Yeah, but I mean the Iran war's been going so.
In the 2nd of March, they kicked off.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was not long after that that he made those comments.
Yeah, which was wrong, you know. But I say it just shows you politics time of year. There's probably politics. I think I've a lot of people don't want New Zealand to get involved.
No, they know
it's wrong. I think most, even the Tories, a lot of Tories know that what America and Israel did was wrong.
You know someone who was quite ardently supportive of Israel and now has decided that maybe they're not.
They're the bad guys. Yeah, and that's quite a shift.
Quite a shift.
Yeah, you know? And the sympathy from the time of the Second World War and the pogroms and the Holocaust and all that. But they've certainly changed their
viewpoint. Oh, I see Trump stuck his oar in because Milei from Argentina wants to start negotiations with the UK about Malvinas and the Falkland Islands.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that.
And that's a bit of a distraction because his own
popularity is falling.
Own economy, inflation is going up. And so this is a bit of a distraction. And Trump's decided because he's been put out because Britain was a little tardy in throwing their support, he's going to stick his oar in and maybe try and review American foreign policy on the Malvinas.
And I don't think seems like the Argentinian population went overly impressed with Milei going over to Israel and dancing around all that sort of stuff. It was a bit overtly enthusiastic.
It's a classic distraction. He's in trouble at home, so we'll have some strife with a foreign power over.
Yeah. Well, hang on, didn't that happen with the Brits? Didn't you know the Falklands?
That's why Thatcher did what she did.
That was a distraction, wasn't it? And it helped crush the coal miners and everything else. I think.
Yeah. Scargill and friends.
So he's sticking his oar in everywhere.
Yeah, I think Milei's he's learned something, he's taken something out of old Trump's book about distraction.
Well, it's a classic thing is distract the populace.
It's an old tactic by politicians all through the century. Trouble at home, we'll have an enemy, we'll find something else to distract people, and then all the country rallies around by the leader because, you know,
Maybe something similar could be said about the so-called assassination attempt. The word staged comes to mind.
Yeah, no, I don't think it was staged. I think there's a lot of conspiracy.
Confusion,
you know,
as well.
Conspiracy theory. It definitely was. Seemed, you know.
I'm kind of glad.
People jumped to the.
I know this is galling to say, but I'm quite glad it was unsuccessful because I don't want Trump made to be a martyr.
No.
Can you imagine what the spin-off from the Republican PR machine, if it had been successful, they would have put that picture back up again with him on the head.
Fight. Yeah.
Well, the famous picture where he's supposed to be a doctor, and it's based on a famous painting of Jesus Christ.
Oh, that one. Yeah.
Holding the light.
Yeah.
And
the other week,
and they stuck his head on. they would bring that back out.
I think they're about the places where he's sticking his head.
Yeah.
It won't be there.
But, let's face it, he's polarising. And, of course, you get people who, decide they want to, either they're so emotional about it or the odd one reacts, you know?
Yeah, they got stuck into Kimmel over the comments he made pre that event.
Right.
Yeah.
However, they haven't taken on board what Levitt had said just before it happened.
Yeah.
Right.
Things will be shooting off, she said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
I thought it was like quite, you know, just when Trump finally decided to go back to the press corps, he's avoided them and then he went back and this happened, so he'll never go again to another one, I would think, wise leader.
Although you
might change the venue.
He's going to have his white to
the venue,
ballroom.
The venue where they held this party wasn't very secure.
It was at a hotel, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Multiple entry points that couldn't be covered.
There was a question that was proposed to Trump by that reporter from 60 Minutes.
Yeah.
About what the... what was it, the manifesto of the shooter was, that they mentioned paedophile and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And she put that question to him. His response was, if I was king, I would deal with you.
Yeah.
That was his response. Rather, see, and they go about divisiveness, and then you hear Trump blaming the lefties, the Democrats, the anarchists for dividing the country. What comes out of your bloody mouth?
Well,
is divisive.
He's a shocking speaker, and he just speaks off the cuff, which is all right if you're just like us three sitting here. We can do it right. But he is the president of the United States of America. You've got to be a bit more careful the higher up the tree you go.
He didn't care, no.
And I just can't stand to listen to him. When he comes on, I put him on mute because I just know it's a whole lot of BA.
And it can change the next day.
Yes, or the same in the mid-sentence.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's done that a few times.
But I'm just on that. King Charles is over there.
It's also got comments on that too.
Well, and it was quite interesting because he did his speech and the thing I observed, it was a good speech compared to Trump. It was an amazing speech. And the Yanks couldn't believe that someone can speak so well. So, you know, I thought it was a bit warmongery still. But, okay, that's because the King tied in the defence strategies of America
and the
UK.
He's reading a speech written by someone else, isn't
exactly.
It?
So probably that. But I noticed one thing in particular. He talked about we've got to figure out how to stop beating the ploughshares into weapons.
Yeah.
And it just went over the Americans' head.
Ploughshare? What's that?
They didn't get it because America's so focused on weaponry. They just... And in the end, a few got it and started clapping and then more joined in. But they... I'd obviously just went straight over the...
Doesn't say a lot for the quality of...
No.
Of the thinking, yeah. Even his references to the Magna Carta, I think it went over them as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because everyone knows that the Magna Carta was where the barons of the time wanted to stem the excesses of a monarch.
Yeah. Ganged up an old King John.
I was disappointed with the King's speech. Like I say, he spoke beautiful English and all that, and it was witty and all that, but he kept on going on about how military for our countries and defending our countries. I thought, as the King, you would have said... We need to use our armies for the good of humanity. You know, because that just sounds like a pact. And what do we do, you know?
Yeah.
And we do need some leadership for humanity, not necessary, you know, even our prime minister, et cetera. Just lead for what, do the right thing. Do the, what's morally right. You know, we just need to start.
Well, that should be our thing. During the week, that there's more and more... Al Jazeera's been having this program called "This Is America," this on-the-spot type journalism, interviewing various experts, as they call it. And it's surprising that they're coming out with things that we've talked about before years ago. That there's profit in war.
Yeah, surprise, surprise.
And obscene profits. And I'm going, yes, I was talking about that 5 years ago.
Yeah, well
before.
How much money was made in the Vietnam War?
But these experts are coming across as this, like, it's breaking
just been
news.
Discovered.
Breaking news. What?
Hello.
Oh, gee. They've been unbelievable.
Which hole have they been under?
The Bill of Mitchell's spending the highest in American history, $1 trillion.
Yeah, they want more money and they want more from Congress, etc. You know, you just think...
It's insane.
It is insane.
Right.
But his other thing about the Magna Carta was that in a number of the U.S. statutes, it's mentioned.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
it
mentioned the Constitution.
And I think, is that a subtle dig at Trump? Because you know what the Magna Carta is, as I said before, that's curbed the excesses of the monarch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it might have been a little dig.
Yeah, and I don't know if...
It would have gone over the top of their heads.
I don't think they got that part of it. Or some of them may have got it.
They really liked the military togetherness thing. They loved that. When the King was going on about that. But, it was interesting. And the King certainly showed how a leader should speak. Whether you agree with what he speaks, you could understand what he was saying. Mm. Yeah. So he showed them up a bit. You know, yeah.
Oh yeah, but then they perform their.
But Trump didn't go to that speech. The vice president went, and the speakers, etc., and both senators and Congress go, but Trump wasn't there.
It's probably just as well because Trump would have elbowed Charlie out of the way because he wanted the microphone.
Yeah,
he, you know, he doesn't like anyone else being up front. He's top dog.
Yeah.
So it's probably just as well from a diplomatic point of view that Trump wasn't there.
Yeah. But so-called protocol, you know, it would have been a protocol thing or something. But you think, okay, you're speaking to your leaders, your president. This is the bizarre thing. The president, like Trump's never been in Congress. He's never been in the Senate.
Mm.
He was just elected president.
Mm.
You know, it doesn't come through the political. No, you know, you're not like our leader, you know, Key was had to go into Parliament before he became Prime Minister. That's sort of how it was.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't. You can't just stand for Prime Minister as a, like Trump did, you know.
Yeah, and they did the same thing with Netanyahu, didn't they? The old clapping seal stuff.
I don't know if they would as much now. Maybe even the Republicans would be getting a bit nervous because of election cycle.
Mm.
They'll be starting to go, ooh, the public's not as, they're not as keen on it. So things are changing in America.
I think Charles had talked about the environment.
Mm.
Yeah.
And there was somebody, I think it was the environment secretary or somebody there, and something was said and he didn't clap at all.
No.
Because it was a dig at him that particular area. Yeah.
And he has always been a strong advocate for the environment, King Charles and all that. But you imagine all these wars going on. Every time a bomb goes off or a Ukrainian drone or a Russian drone hits a oil facility.
The amount of pollution.
Amount of the pollution. And if the Yanks and the Israel go back to war for Iran, Iran is still producing oil, but they can't get rid of a lot of it now because of the blockades by our friends the Americans, etc. Oh, so cool. In the name of justice. I haven't figured that one out yet, but that's another story. But you know, if they decide to have another go, they'll blow up all these full reservoirs of oil and everything else. What, the pollution? No, it's not even just. It's like we get a domestic fishing trawler goes down, or a one in civil times, and it's like, oh, there could be a pollution there, and there could be oil. All this war going on. How much pollution has happened? And how much news do we get about it?
Well, you just have to go back to the Iraq attack on Kuwait and the destruction of the oil fields then.
The reports, very little reference to that, about pollution. It's all about the damage and who fired what and how much.
Oh, yee-haw, we got them. And rather than, hang on a minute, we just spilled 20,000 gallons of water, of oil into the Danube or wherever.
Whatever it is,
So, you know, and you imagine every... And the military, apparently, you know, when we judge, we measure, what do you call it? Fumes and what do you call the name of that? You call it the environment.
Yeah.
The military doesn't count.
Greta Thunberg talked about
that.
Not just American, no military.
They can do what they like. It's just no accountability, we've polluted
this area.
Apparently the Gaza, you know, it's been the equivalent of so many Hiroshima bombs.
Well, it's just been turned into one big garbage bin.
Yeah, but all the dust, the contaminant. That's all going to the sea. There's probably only 1.5 million or 1.75 million Gazans left. All their toiletries is all just going where?
Into the sand and then into the sea.
And not just, it doesn't just affect the Gazans, but the other countries on the... Turkey and...
Oh, the Lebanese and the Israelis sunning themselves. Yeah.
It's all going into there, right?
Yeah. So we're all connected.
Yes. That's what they don't seem to have forgotten.
We don't seem to... That's none of your business because it does matter actually what every country does as far as the world citizens do.
It's called an ecosystem.
Yeah, and the other thing I thought just on that briefly is that I see the Gaza flotilla, the Israelis had a go at them up at Crete or somewhere.
Yeah. That's way outside their territory.
Way outside international waters. What's going on?
Yeah.
Yeah, and they've no outcry.
And then something happens to Israel, and they don't. Oh. And it's like, oh, we need, you know, they're breaking international law.
Yeah.
Well, hello.
They've broken it plenty of times.
Yeah. And where's the world's outcry?
Didn't they attack that boat in Malta?
Yeah.
But this is like more than they've really just tried to disrupt the whole fleet, you know. But
But
they say it's just they're acting with impunity.
Well, yeah, because people haven't got a bloody spine, to be frank.
Well, and I say,
the meat has been bought and sold.
Well, that's what worries me about the Prime Minister, what's perceived to be the Prime Minister's stance on supporting America. If he's supporting America on the Iran thing, is that why he's been muted on the whole genocide and Israel, Palestine.
It sort of leads to that.
And then is that because of his religious beliefs or someone's pulling his strings?
You're just complicating the issue, aren't you? You put religion into the mix.
Well, we don't know because, as I say, it just seems strange that
I'm just being facetious.
Yeah, I know. But sort of like,
I just think that's just spineless.
He's spineless when he chooses to be.
That was brought up when he's backed out of those interviews with those two, O'Brien and Tame.
Yeah.
And Tame.
Mm. Yeah,
that shows to me a little bit of a coward.
Well, it shows to me that you've got to be briefed if you're really going to get drilled by a reporter or whatever, which is their job. You've got to know your subject.
Yeah. You've got to have a spine too.
Well, I don't think he does.
Yeah.
Well, no, he doesn't
He doesn't give the impression that.
Doesn't give you the confidence that he has. Like Winston Peters running rings around.
Oh, running.
You know, even Winston's apologies.
Winston Peters could run rings around him with his eyes closed.
Yeah, you know, it's made Winston Peters look reasonable, even though he's not reasonable. On his American policy, and he's no.
Yeah.
And it made Luxon look like the bad guy, the warmonger. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, when you sign it, you're complicit, aren't you?
Yeah.
Simple as that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, this whole government has been signed over the whole genocide stuff.
Yeah, it's been very silent. Yeah. Yeah.
So it starts from there.
Yeah. And I say let's face it, what Israel and America is doing is definitely connected to the whole Palestine, Israel issue. Yeah, we know for a fact that they've always wanted to destroy the basis for the countries around them. You know, wasn't that seven countries that Israel and America had their plan, and Iran was the last one left?
Yeah, Jeffrey Sash talks about this.
Yeah, and surprise, they attack Iran.
Mm.
You know, but anyway, it's knocking. Trump's. I'm sure Trump and the Republicans will get a hiding in Congress in the midterms, and they could even well get pushed out of the Senate.
Yes, they could get hiding, but will there be any real difference?
Well, that's the danger, and that's the real issue. Americans are
don't vote for Trump. We're better than he is. That seems to be an mantra.
They've always had this thing, for the Democrats, is because over there, their Democrats is blue and their Republicans is red. The opposite way round as far as conservative and a mild Labor Party. So very mild.
Very mild.
But they're saying is vote blue no matter who. Well, I always comment back. I go, vote blue, but it matters who, because there's still all these warmongers there and these pro-Israel. You know, and I say if Israel was a decent country or fought, fine. But hey, they're not. They practice apartheid occupation, and they've just killed how many people in Lebanon? How many in Iran? They've killed how many Palestinians?
Yeah.
Taken how much land? They're not the good guys.
Yeah.
And they could one day maybe they might see the light.
But it may be bloody too late.
Well, I say, how many Palestinians will be left by then? You know.
Well, they might be living here.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll see. But it's all intertied up, and it's just a worry that we've just gone, well, we should be supporting America on an illegal war. Hello?
No, we shouldn't.
And it's an obviously illegal war. If it was, well, it's grey and all that, but Iran didn't attack
anybody.
Anyone. Iran didn't attack Israel. Iran didn't attack America. And it's like America and Israel have attacked them. So it's... You know, how do you judge that? How do you... And everyone knows that it was that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, we can see it was mild.
Yeah. Israel has tried to justify it, saying, well, they were going to attack us. Just because you have got an army, does that mean, well, we should get them now before they get us? Is that common sense?
Yeah,
it might be practical. Yeah. It might be... But it's not the right thing to do, is it? Yeah, I remember when I was a... kid, my parents would say, you don't get into a fight and don't hit anyone unless they hit you first. You know? You know?
Yeah, that's why Iran took the retaliatory action the second time around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? So, it's a bit of a mess, but we're paying for the pump, and if it goes off again, the petrol prices will go up again, fertiliser. Mm-hmm. And we're all right because we are a rich nation, so we can afford it. But what about the countries that are struggling to pay for their fuel?
Well, the repercussions of the fertilizer is that they estimate that crop production will drop by 30%.
Well, some farmers just who are poor, not all farmers are poor by any means.
I'm talking about worldwide food supplies could drop by 30%.
And the countries that won't be able to have the fertiliser?
Some countries will fare worse than others.
And they will have famine and then...
And their prices will go up and it'll be double whammy. It just goes on.
Well, you have two things. You have malnutrition and worse famine and then you also can have migration. And what does the West go on about? Too many migrants.
Well, aren't
you sort of feeding into it by your actions?
They're creating the problem.
Yeah.
And then blame the victims.
That's exactly what they're doing.
And there was another piece in this week. Keir Starmer has managed to avoid being investigated for did he or did he not know what Mandelson, security checks and that sort of thing. And the Labour Party was compelled by the party whips to vote on party lines, so it was scuppered.
Yeah.
Any prospect of an investigation, nothing.
Yeah, because they've got a big majority, I suppose.
And this is the guy who campaigned on being, I'm the man who, the buck will stop with me, I'm responsible.
Yeah. They always say that.
Yeah, I did cringe with Nemi Badenoch. I thought the Tories, they can't really take the moral high ground, but they're having a go at him on this, that he's deceived Parliament, or not deceived, but hasn't spoken the truth in front of Parliament.
Should ask the Tories what their position is on the illegal war.
Well, let's face it.
So anyway, he survives for
another time
till the next fiasco.
But let's face it: the council elections, the Scottish and Welsh elections,
and this week.
London, some of the other areas, are on our Friday, May the 7th. So it's their Thursday, our Friday.
Yeah, yeah.
And that'll be interesting. If the Labour, particularly Labour, is going to get a hiding, if they get a real hiding, that will put a lot of pressure on Starmer to resign. Probably more than anything
else.
Which
will be kind of a bittersweet moment, because it depends more if they get hammered, who's going to step in and take
over. Well, they're saying.
That's what I'm worried about, is reform and restore.
Yeah.
And, other miscreants.
So, yeah, what
will the people be better off? That's my first reaction. Will there be any meaningful, sincere changes about how things are?
Well, if Labour gets gutted in these local elections and it goes to reform and to the Greens, probably the Lib Dems might gain out of it. It's a middle of the way. But they are a local election, the council elections. But the Scottish, they say they're expecting a big Scottish SNP, Scottish National Party, to have a big run. But they say in Wales it'll be between, how do you pronounce it, Plaids and...
Plaid Cymru.
Reform.
Yeah.
That could be a scrap between them. So it'll be interesting because it won't affect the Westminster, the UK government direct initially, but then what tends to happen is MPs go, oh, this could threaten me, suddenly a bit of self-interest kicks up.
It doesn't play well that Nigel Farage is an admirer of Viktor Orban.
Well, that's another
populist
figure.
Says it a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, so he's no clean skin at all.
He's a tax dodger.
Farage.
Yeah, tax dodger.
I think there's some reform-dominated council in Ipswich, I think it is, in Suffolk, and that's been an absolute cluster of fire trucks.
Yeah.
They've not been able to work together.
They may lose some there.
Well, you get a...
Could be a backlash locally. Yeah,
who are too polarising, often the people they get to stand are also polarised people. So,
It doesn't work well.
Steady as you go doesn't necessarily apply.
It'd be interesting to see what the turnout is like.
Yeah, it will be. That'll be the...
With the cynicism and the... which I can understand... whether that will impact on turnout.
Well, that we'll get from overseas, because we're all talking about something that over there in the UK.
But
you get an idea of how important it is to the UK people by turnout. Mm. If there's a 30% turnout, none of them give a rat's bottom, to be fair. If there's a bigger turnout than normal, people go, this is important. So that's how you get an idea what we're getting feedback from media and social media. Is it on the mark, or is it they've been building it up and it's no big deal to the bombs?
Yeah.
You know? So we'll see.
Wait and see.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
But that's May the 7th, that's right.
Yeah. We'll be able to know by next weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
7th of May.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a good one.
That's me. I can't think of anything else. Well, I say I've been watching the news in piecemeal fashion because it's just so much garbage out there. It's just unbelievable.
I had an interesting. I visited a client. I've been concerned about because of his health.
Right.
And he says even despite his pain based stuff, he said he dreads listening to the news because he fears if he watches it, a nuclear bomb would have been dropped here somewhere.
That's his fear.
Fear that the bomb, somebody would use go for the nuclear.
Well, he's not too far wrong. We're only 90 seconds away on the doomsday clock, aren't we?
Yeah. So, and that kind of reflects on the way that I watch the news these days. I get sick and tired of the dribble that comes out of our politicians
and our journalists
as well. We see that what dominated one of the days on the news, old Sherman being exited out of the press reporter out of Parliament by Brownlee because what did she do? She made some sort of slur towards another journo at a budget event in Willis's office last year.
Right.
However, I think she was wrapped over the knuckles over her pursuing of Stuart's Smith over his where they were talking about the confidence vote in Luxon. And what Stuart Smith had said about what he
made some sort of slight.
Some sort of comment about
or perceived slight.
That there's disquiet in the Labour in the national ranks.
Quite reasonable. I mean,
yeah, but they pursued the way that they pursued him in Parliament. I think there were two of them.
How dare they question about there might have been some dissent in the
I think there is. I think there is dissent in the National Party ranks.
Yeah,
and then because one of the other people that they approached was Barbara Kuriga, the MP for King Country.
Kuriga,
or something like that. So she was also asked, because she was one of the names that was mentioned about a dissenting voice, because there was a list of them. And she, I never said anything like that, sort of thing,
It's pathetic, really, isn't it?
No, I never said anything like that.
It's party loyalty above all.
Yeah, I think there's dissension. Because Luxon said he had an overwhelming support of the caucus at this special meeting, but I've got reservations about
that.
That too. There'll be backbenchers who will be slowly disquiet.
Yeah, behind the scenes, behind closed doors, there'll be discussions going on.
Well, who's going to win from all this is Winston Peters.
Unfortunately,
that's the reality. Is that he will pick up votes from this. Because it's that guy...
Because the National perceived to be...
Well, I mean, look at the main headline is, don't mention the war. National ministers avoid backing Luxon's alleged support of invasion.
It's not really an invasion, it's just to keep the Strait of Hormuz open. That's what
it's going to make this coming election quite interesting, this sort of disagreement between coalition partners... It could be quite an interesting election.
Well,
where's Labour in all this?
Well, they're there, but they don't get the media time. And also, I suppose...
They should be asserting themselves.
Yeah, well, but Winston's grabbing the... He's taking the wind out of everyone else's sails, isn't he?
Countering someone who's hogging the limelight. Others have stepped up, saying, hang on a minute.
It's interesting from this guy Patman, the professor of international studies, said this election, foreign affairs could well be quite an election issue for the first time in a long time
because of what's going on in the world.
Yeah. So, and it says it directly, when it doesn't affect us, and that's what I've said for ages, it doesn't seem, you know, Palestinian kids seem to be able to be blowing up as wherever and starved. It hasn't really affected the world. When but we start paying for more for our petrol and
food
etc., suddenly international affairs, and that's caused by what happens in the world.
Not so much because they've seen the light, they've just
felt the heat, which goes back and goes, oh, what's going on here?
So they haven't gained a moral backbone at all. They've just looking at their pockets and seeing how much is left.
Focused on their belly button, so to speak.
The genocide stuff, they remain quiet on that.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable. Even Peter's is quiet on that.
Oh, of course,
staggering. If you're silently complicit in this genocide going on, kids being killed day in and day out, or starved,
and then the same people then invade another country. Mm-hmm. Yeah, two countries, Lebanon. Don't forget Lebanon.
Many people being killed there too.
I can't see Israel moving out of Lebanon.
I can
see them staying put.
Well, they're doing it to defend themselves because they're just innocent. They just minding their own business.
They thought they were going to hit us first, so we hit them first because, no.
But they're just into this defence. Their idea of defence is attack and kill.
That word covers a multitude of sin.
Yeah, of course it does.
Yeah, it does. It always has.
It's like, oh, what are you doing? The guy who smashed the statue. Still gets me. You know, everyone's gone, oh, that's terrible, he's smashing the picture of Christ, which it was, etc. Where was the talk about what's a foreign soldier doing in someone else's land, smashing the soldier in the first, the statue in the first place?
Yeah.
Hello?
Very much so,
But that doesn't get coverage, it was just the statue of Christ.
I think that's going to be investigated, I've heard one report, but likelihood, if they are found guilty, they're prisoned. Their prison sentences or their conditions won't be nearly as bad.
He's got 30 days, apparently. So
who's the two coalition partners, Netanyahu, the security minister and...
Smoltridge and...
Apparently they're having a bit of a spat too, and they're having a go at Netanyahu, not because they've seen the light or want to change they want to get rid of him.
Oh, Israel's got elections coming up
in October.
Around the same time as midterms.
So they're jostling for Bishop because they want him out, but they're still going to prosecute the war.
They're not going, we want to make friends with the Palestinians equal rights.
It's about flicking Netanyahu and then carrying on.
And we know that because the protests they've had against Netanyahu, huge protests, great. And some about against the war, but none of them about, hang on a minute, we need to end our apartheid and our occupation.
That's it in a nutshell, the apartheid and the argument.
Yeah.
So there's a bit of bickering going on.
Yeah, jockeying for positions. Yeah. And I don't know how to pronounce his name. Natalia Bennett. He's talking about doing a standing coalition with the other guy who was briefly a prime minister, so they're all jockeying for a position, but it's they're all Arabs are terrorist parties,
so there's no changes,
warmongers,
business as usual,
sadly,
they're kind of entrenched in their parliament, like they're entrenched in the US system,
back to Hamilton. We'll do, I got privileged enough to have a house, so I got a rates demand,
right.
I like they do it. I like they talk to you. They the chief executive Lance Verfort came out with they call it council corridor, and just basically what they're doing. You know, it's just a brief summary, etc.
Where your rates are going.
Well, no, that's on your form anyway. You get a rate bill and it actually shows you where all your rates go.
Where the money's going.
Yeah, general term, 30% water, da-da-da.
Yeah.
But on the back of it, of course, there's EOI.
And what's that about?
That's the new arm of not just our council but Waikato District Council, etc.
Is this the council...
This was a
semi-privatised body.
They wouldn't describe it like that.
CCI.
I think it's setting the foundations for future privatisation.
This is the official blurb. EOI is your new water organisation, publicly owned by Hamilton City Council and Waikato District Council, and working in partnership with Waikato Tainui.
That sounds good so far.
Yeah.
There's a big part there.
Yeah. So nothing will change apart from they have responsibility.
Yeah, that's the button, Fred. Yeah. Nothing will change.
Nothing will change. So,
We talked that last week about Rotary Lakes Council coming into agreement with local iwi for a long-term water.
So they're doing some. Plan. So they're doing some crystal ball gazing, are they? So this is going to stay. The same.
Yeah.
Well, I hope it's the same. I hope they've looked at what Rotary City Council and
that's good idea.
Local iwi have just signed that 35-year agreement.
Secure drinking water.
So, council, you still will notify your council if you've got a leaky water tap, you know, in the street or anything else. It's just,
The report is not the problem. It's the repairs.
The real nervous thing is it whether they even know it or not. Is it a first step towards privatisation,
and that's the problem?
I'm just naturally
and going on the
me being cynical.
Well, and also from the UK, we're cynical.
Yes, Thames Water Valley Authority should hang its head in shame.
It's ripped off
customers for years, and every time they got close to pinging them, what do? They paid out a dividend to their shareholders. But they got stuck this time. Late last year, they got hammered. Millions they got stung for.
Yeah.
Because of wasted water and all the other problems.
Well, and it all ties in a little bit, back to this population strategy. England's got 60-something million people.
Somewhere
like that.
Private water.
So, and the rivers are a mess. They're trying to start doing some stuff.
The joke is they've discovered water in the shit. Sorry, people.
But that's telling the truth.
Yes. But that's why population strategy, we have to go, okay, more people here, have we got the strategy and the structures in place?
Yeah. For the water.
Or do we just become a UK where the wealthy go offshore to some place?
Their water supply's all right.
Yeah.
Al Jazeera some years ago, it has been repeated, is called Lords of Water.
Yeah, I saw it.
Documentary,
yeah.
And it's about the privatisation of water in Australia, and how in Europe they're going back to nationalising those assets because basically only the government or local council really should be able to look after those facilities, because the moment you privatise it, money gets involved and the infrastructure is not improved on, invested in.
Declines, et cetera.
It's done.
And the quality of water
can be done for profit. Oh, it is done for profit. Yeah.
It comes down to public.
Public service. Public utility.
It should remain public.
And it is maintained. The infrastructure is maintained.
Well, even if
it's upgraded.
Even if
we use a business type model, as long as it's publicly owned.
Yeah. Yeah, because the moment someone is getting the decision, shall I fix that pipe or not?
I'll get
a bonus if we don't do it. You know,
or worse, the customer says, "Oh, I've saved on my consumption of water. Oh, well, put the price up because we're not making as much money out of you."
That's the other danger. We go to meters, and then they realize, because there will be a base cost.
Yeah.
So you can be as mean and frugal as you like.
Doesn't make any difference. The price will go up.
Well, that's the danger.
It's like electricity. You curb your use of power because
that was set in stone, wasn't it? Or was that the telephone charges? Everything was set in stone, and then
the trouble is the stone fragmented and it just shattered.
It was limestone.
Yeah.
Indeed. It's a mess.
And on that note, we're out of here. You'll catch Free Left Turn, a left wing's perspective, on www.freefm.org.nz, or look at the podcast.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.